Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEEI.
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like it is sure.
Yeah.
With Ken Laird from the Greg Hill Morning Show.
What a bunch of criminals. We ought to be in jail. That's all there is to it.
Pete Blackburn from CBS Sports.
What are you guys doing?
Putting on the foil.
Every game.
Yeah, you want some?
No.
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman.
Everything gonna be all right?
Sunday Skate is brought to you by Star Market.
Come here, Greg. None of that stinking root beer.
The official supermarket of the Boston Bruins and by Red River Technology.
Brought your cars with you, huh?
Yeah, we're on the road. We're all set to go.
Lace them up for some Bees talk right now.
We got a lot of losses.
Sunday Skate, I'll give it a big B plus.
On Sports Radio WEEI.
We're in it to win it with Andre Kasha. That was the quote from Don Sweeney. We're in it to win it. Or is that a reference to something that will happen tomorrow? Welcome to Sunday Skate, presented by Star Market and Red River Technology. Ken Laird here, Pete Blackburn, and Matt Kalman, who held the fourth down very literally last week. And the final words of Pete Blackburn, I believe, were, you want a low-cost option? Look for Andre Kasha. In some form or fashion, Pete, that's how you ended it last week. I need talked into this one. I'm on record as being a Don Sweeney fan. I think he's the best GM in town. But if this is it, I don't get it. Explain to me why Kasha is the guy that's going to put the Bruins over the top in 2020.
I mean, I love the deal. I love the deal because you use your first-round pick, you get out of the Backes contract, and you get a really, really good player. You get a really good player. Kasha's a really good player. You know, his numbers don't jump off the page, but that's because he's been playing on a very bad Anaheim team that doesn't
score
goals.
That's where your numbers should jump off the page. If you're on a terrible team, you should be racking up the points.
That's not how it works, though.
It is how it works, because there's always one or two guys on a bad team that goes out there and they cheat a little bit. They don't, you know, they're not on the right side of the puck. They're getting breakaways. They're cherry picking. They're racking up garbage time goals and they're down three and with a minute to go. That's where the numbers should be coming in. So he didn't even put up those numbers on the bad teams where he probably didn't have to. You know, he didn't play a meaningful game like probably the last, you know, 2 months of the season last year. He should have been racking them up.
I mean, his biggest issue is that he doesn't stay on the ice.
Well, that's
he gets
too.
Hurt. He gets hurt. He's
other than that,
they got away with Johansson last year because he was pretty injury
same
prone.
Same case with him.
He was pretty injury prone and he stayed healthy. So they said, "Oh, let's do this again. Only let's get a guy who's even lighter and smaller and more banged up."
Well, it's a good point with Johansson. We were both skeptical of that deal, Cal.
Sure.
I mean, I'll admit I didn't think that was the good. We talked a lot about Stone and the guys they missed out on, Nyquist, etc. And Johansson was a success, although they lose in Game 7 and secondary scoring was still an issue. But I think that's nitpicking. They were in it and had a chance. But you brought up the health issues, Pete. He had, somebody said, 6 or 7 concussions in 4 years?
Yeah, concussions are an issue. Yeah.
6 or 7. And, I mean...
why? This is what I want to say. No one's answered this question for me. Why did the Anaheim Ducks, who are in a rebuild, like you said, a crappy team for 2 years now going on, why did they want to trade a 24-year-old forward who scored 20 goals once, who is under control for as long as he's under control? Well, why?
I think the health issues are probably part of it, and also you get a first-round pick, and you take on David Backes, who doesn't really matter for that team that's not going anywhere. So you get a first-round pick out of it.
But doesn't that slow your development? I mean, right now, the number one thing the Rangers are probably thinking is if we trade Kreider for a first, yeah, that looks wonderful, but how far are we setting back what we've pushed forward with the Panarin signings and the Trouba pickup? And they're closer to contending now than they are to being a bottom-feeding team.
Right. So you can't say the same about the Ducks.
Are they looking to strip down? Is that what it is?
I would assume so. Yeah, well, I mean, that team stinks. They should be looking to strip down.
Well, Kasha is 24. Matt's right. He's got a lot of control left. 1 year left at $2.6 million, and then he's an RFA, so you might have this guy for 7 or 8 years if he's good. But beyond the concussion issues, which it's tough to get beyond, Pete, he has, on the year, 9 hits. 9 delivered hits, 5th fewest in the league. 9. He also, the shooting percentage, I don't understand. I mean, this is maybe an anomaly. Maybe he's playing on a terrible team, and that's the explanation. But he's scoring at a 4.46% clip at 5-on-5, 9th worst among regulars in the National Hockey League. So he's got concussion issues, and doesn't hit anybody, and he can't score.
Wasn't that like one of the top things that Don Sweeney cited in his
It should have
in
been.
His conference goal, is that his 5-on-5 scoring?
Yeah, but I mean, if your shooting percentage is below league average, and he still has what, 9, 7 goals?
7 goals.
If your shooting percentage is that low, and you still are scoring, that's a good sign because the shooting percentage will come up. And so, like, I'd be concerned if he had 7 goals and his shooting percentage was pretty high.
Okay, that's one way to look at it, I guess.
I mean, his underlying numbers are pretty good when you look at them. He's like the best Ducks forward on that team, which isn't saying a whole lot.
Just don't cite any per 60 minutes.
No, I have these written down.
No one plays 60 minutes in a hockey game.
I read The Athletic. He is an analytics darling, Matt. You're going to love this.
People used to blow me away with the Ryan Spooner per 60-minute scoring numbers.
He's Anaheim's most efficient scorer per 60 over the last 2 years.
And like you just said, he's like on a crappy team. So what does that mean? He's the best of the worst.
Anaheim hasn't been that bad over the past 2 years.
I just want to go on record, too, that I'm not ripping the deal at this point because I want to see what chips fall now. But if this is the only thing, that has to be a disappointment.
Is it fair to say Sweeney bundled getting rid of David Backes with his deadline shopping? Like, he tried to do
absolutely
two things at once. I mean, yeah, that's it's not like crazy to say.
And he still paid the same price, right? We always knew it was going to be a first-round pick. So it's not like he waited too long or anything like that. I mean, he got the job done. But he kept
some of the salary.
For flexibility, but he kept only 25%. That's a hell of a thing to do, considering, you know, the how much did the Leafs keep on Marlowe when they traded him, right?
I thought they didn't keep any of it. Didn't they get rid of $6.5 million of Marlowe for their first round pick before the season began?
I don't remember what the financials were, but I know that they gave up their first round pick and didn't get anything in return.
Right.
Okay, so that's the going rate.
I mean, the fact is that this is the deal. I totally agree that it could be a good deal, and I even wrote this. They won this deal in a vacuum. They won the deal. They got just getting rid of Backes and having the flexibility for this year, and more importantly for next year, cap wise, you win this deal.
Well,
and then,
you can't say that if number one priority is this year, they did nothing to win for this year.
That's what I'm saying. But they still win the deal because Kasha
gave up their first round pick.
If Kasha scores one goal, he was better than Backes. You gave up a first round pick.
But
you were giving up
the
first
ammo.
Round pick to get rid of Backes, no matter what.
If you got rid of a first round pick and you got rid of David Backes, how many people would have been mad? Not a lot of people.
Okay, but you're now at the deadline where you need a first round pick to get Chris Kreider, right? That is gone. You are not getting Chris Kreider. Your first round asset is gone.
I said there are other first round picks. The draft is not five years
from now.
Okay. That's probably
That's
probably more valuable than this year's first round pick because this year's first round pick is going to be a high first. So if you're in New York, I'd be looking. I'd say I don't want this year's first round pick. You're in first place in the league right now.
Why, the Bruins are going to tank after next year? They're suddenly be the first pick.
They might not be the first team overall in the league.
I mean, if they're still going to be a good team. I don't know. That seems like a hard sell to the fan base. We're going for the first round pick in 2024. That's when the Bruins will suck.
2021 is not that far away. What are you talking about? You could trade first round picks in consecutive years.
So you think they can still get Kreider?
They could
if they really want to
go all in. They could absolutely do it still. I'm not saying they're going to, but there is an ability to do that. And when you say you're in it to win, then maybe that's what you have to do. And maybe if it's not Kreider, then you have to at least package some mid-level picks to bolster up that defense and make sure you're not one injury away from John Moore playing in your top six.
I mean,
by the way, I don't think that Kreider's going to get traded. I think the Rangers are going to keep him.
Well, they're only 4 points
out. That's what I'm saying. I think that team is going to keep him. They want
to
re-sign him.
And then you turn to the guy you like, Palmieri, which is all well and good, and people putting out these cockamamie trade things on Twitter about Danton Heinen. Why do you think the Devils want Danton Heinen any more than you do? But you could ante up again. And because let's face it, we talked about last week, the Devils don't have to trade him. They can keep him another year and then do the same dance next year. So you have to knock their socks off. So if that's a deal you're going to get done, which I think right now would probably be crazy to add another smaller forward to this lineup and not add any bulk at all. If you're going to make this team smaller, you're in trouble. But if that's something you're seeking to do, you can still do it. You still have plenty of you didn't trade. Like, where did Axel Anderson fit? Top five prospects? Barely, probably. So you still have the prospects to get things done. Maybe, you know, everyone talking.
But you said they have a bunch of untouchable
prospects.
Listen, just
because the insiders say the Rangers are doing a Kreider thing for anything less than a first doesn't mean it's going to be 100% true. If you tell them you're going to give them Studnicka, they might say, okay, then we'll take a Studnicka and a third. You know?
I thought you said they're not giving up Studnicka.
I'm just making an example. You can use what prospects they value and what prospects the Rangers value.
Why give an example of a prospect they're not willing to give? I mean, they're not going to give any of the top prospects. They are not giving up Studnicka.
All right, so that's one. What about Vaakanainen or Frederick or Beecher? They might do that.
I mean, that's what it's going to take now. You're going to give up some serious. Now, forget about if Kreider's not the guy. Brandon Saad's name has now come up as a serious possibility. And that is the kind of player that puts you over the hump, does it not? I mean, a physical player who's got real seasoning and proven playoff scoring.
How long ago was that playoff scoring?
Okay.
And, to me, that's one that you get on Monday at 2:59 p.m. for a third-round pick or something. I don't know what the Blackhawks are looking for, but I'm not going all in for Brandon Saad, who hasn't been much of it, has been pretty much a shadow of himself for 4 years.
Well, he's 18 goals this year.
Except when you tell me what he's doing per 60 minutes, because he's going to play that 60-minute hockey game. Where
and they better retain some of that salary. I mean, he's making $6 million on the cap.
Right.
All right, tell us what you think of the Andre Kasha trade, 617-779-7937 here on Sunday Skate. Do you like it? And as you put out on the poll on the Skate Pod Twitter account, Matt, if this is it, are you satisfied? I think 2/3 the responses said no. I mean, this better not be it. The thing with the getting rid of the Backes contract, it basically, so they're saving $4.5 million next year.
Right,
that's established. Is that all going to keep Torrey Krug? So, and if that's the case,
well, no, that's going to Grizzlick, DeBrusk, Bjork, Kuhlman.
So it doesn't guarantee Krug is here. Because if you would tell the average Bruin fan, all right, this trade means Torrey Krug is staying around for another 5 years,
right.
it's a lot easier to sell.
But, I mean, I forget who said it yesterday, but don't you think that the longer this goes, the more, you know, you're going to have to, I think the longer you wait, the higher the price is going on Torrey Krug.
Could be. I mean, they should have announced a trade like the minute after they announced
I don't blame them for not announcing the extension at this point, because you still have to keep some flexibility. You don't want to commit to paying some guy. Now that you created this flexibility, you don't want to throw a $7 million contract on next year right now. You want to at least probably wait now to the offseason to see what you're going to be doing, or at least after the deadline to see who you're picking up. I mean, if you're picking up, let's say you did get Kreider, as remote as that possibility is now, clearly you want to re-sign him too, right? So you don't want to have a Torrey Krug extension right now hanging over you that rules that out completely.
I mean, I wouldn't mind it hanging over me if it means he's staying around. I mean, if he gets to the offseason and sits free agency,
you can't put yourself in a position where everyone knows, okay, they're going to have to trade somebody big to clear the cap space at this point. Why would you put yourself back in cap jail at this point when you just got out?
I mean, but people know they're trying to sign Krug. I don't know. Who do they have to give up now to get still to keep Krug? Heinen? Is that the offseason move? They'll trade Danton Heinen?
I've always said Krejci.
Well, Krejci still.
Krejci's the guy, I think.
And, but if you traded Backes at a first and still have to give up Krejci to keep Krug, that is insane.
David Backes.
Didn't they have other options with Backes? How else couldn't they have got out of some of the money on that deal in the offseason?
They were going to buy out next year. I think it was like a $2 million saving. It was like a minuscule savings next year, and like
$2 million.
It was $2 million the year after.
So nothing next year,
basically.
Okay. That's usually how the buyouts work, is that you don't really get anything in the long term.
Because they gave him so much in bonuses. I mean, that's maybe the biggest place where Sweeney screwed up on that thing, was that he gave him so much in bonuses that the buyouts were never worthwhile. Last year, they were like going to get penalized more for having him than for buying him out than for having him.
I mean, it just it seems like a trade for next year. It seems like they got rid of Backes for next year. So did you win in the short term? This Kasha deal, he's total question mark. He hasn't played since February 7th when
Muzzin went in the short term, because you found somebody to finally take the Backes deal, because the fact is it doesn't compare to Marlowe in the fact that he had that extra year, right? That's what was holding you back all along, to so to finally find a team that would take him and just take a first-round pick, because everyone knew you were desperate to get rid of him.
And
so,
give up a good player. Like, get a good player while dumping the back
contract exactly what he is
a huge win.
I will totally accept that. He is a good player. If he's healthy.
He is? 7 goals? I mean he seems like a marginal player.
I mean, I haven't seen one person knock his talent or his, you know, his speed.
He has 9 hits and he's shooting 4%.
I mean, you don't acquire him for hits. He's not a hitter.
It doesn't make him an AHL player, Ken. I mean, he's not hitting people. I mean,
and he can't stay on the ice. But other than that, he's great. What would it?
No one said great.
He said really, really good.
I think he's a really good player.
Well,
I think you're overrating Andre Kasha. I mean, I think we're now putting such stock in Sweeney that it's like getting clouded by the fact that this was a back.
Holy, the Don Sweeney love. I thought he was Gandhi or something after he made this trade.
Is.
People on Twitter were like starting a parade. They were getting the duck boats ready just to celebrate Don Sweeney made a trade.
Like I said, had they gotten rid of Backes, given up the first round pick, that's it.
Right.
People would have celebrated that trade.
Exactly.
To get rid of Backes, use the first round pick, and get a good player in return, I think that's a huge win for Sweeney.
And let's also remove this whole idea that, because he's Czech, this is going to work.
I think they're putting some stock in that. It's been mentioned like 8 times in the press release. I mean,
considering how little enthusiasm Zdeno Chara has had for some of the Slovaks that have come over to this team, it's not like Krejci and Pastrnak have been magic together over the years either.
If they had just traded for Andre Kasha separately, what would it have taken? Forget about the Backes, the first round pick, and the prospect. It gets like clouded in there. Is it like a third round pick for this guy?
No, I think the first. It probably
no.
He's a 24-year-old.
I mean, if you
under
convince,
control forward,
sure. But I mean, you threw the Backes deal in there, and it still only took a first round pick and like a mid level prospect. So maybe a second rounder or something like that. It's got to be less than a first round pick, considering they were willing to take on Backes.
I feel like they should have just done that deal then. Second rounder for Kasha.
Oh, I completely disagree.
Why?
Because you get rid of Backes.
Because you don't know if you're ever getting rid of the Backes thing.
That's huge.
Go through this again next year, and you don't want to have that buyout hanging over your head.
Hanging over your head? I mean, it's about this year. It's about keeping the first round pick to get
but
an
it's
elite
never
guy
about
at the
this year. I mean, Sweeney can throw out
he
slogans.
He said we're in it to win it.
He's probably just giving the marketing department a soundbite to put out some ads. I mean, he's not. They're always going to be towing the line between the now and the future. You know that. If you haven't been watching, that is why they do these deals. That's why they weren't in on Muzzin last year. That's why they don't shore up the defense when they're trading guys for Coils and Johansson, because they're always thinking about the future. So they're not going to trade more of the future than they probably have right now. I mean, I'm not saying they're not going to do anything tomorrow, but I will be very surprised if they do something bigger than maybe just getting another depth forward somewhere.
Joe Thornton, I mean, that's been thrown out as now the feel-good story. That would be, you know, to be honest, I think they could use a better fourth-line center. So if that's who it is, and they bump Corrali out of here.
I think it's a low price. I mean, obviously the storyline helps and nostalgia helps, and I'm sure that's part of the reason why I want him here. But, I mean, he could be a good fourth-line center, a good net front presence on the power play. And for the price, it probably won't cost you much. I don't hate that move if that's where they go.
I would agree with that. Now, what would it take to get Thornton? Are they
so
gonna,
you're
like,
going to put Joe
for...
Thornton in the lineup instead of Sean Corrali, and you're going to reduce your speed to that much and your physicality?
Well, not necessarily.
He just said that.
I think you move Corrali to the wing.
Okay.
Corrali on the wing has been pretty good.
So Thornton, Corrali, Wagner, or some combination of that for your fourth line?
Right. Rotate Nordstrom in.
Seems slow to me. It seems like we don't need more.
Well, is the fourth line good enough now?
No.
I mean, for some reason, they're just not clicking. I mean, Corrali's had a weird year.
Nordstrom's obviously, I mean, he's not in the lineup right now, so obviously there's something there that they're not telling us about his allergies and his, you know, broken bones, whatever he has going on.
Yeah.
Clearly he's not 100%, hasn't been probably since the start of the year, maybe. You know, came back too fast from that injury or whatever happened, but he's been, you know, plus the guy blocks 1,000 shots. I mean, he never shies away from a damn shot, which I'll never understand.
Now, one of your latest pieces at WEI.com, Matt, you wrote about the competition for those that Kasha could replace in the lineup. So who gets bumped here ultimately tomorrow when he gets in?
Well, it's funny that we've been talking for like 15 minutes here and we haven't brought up the 9-3 debacle. But based on the 9-3 debacle, I think Bruce Cassidy probably wants to sit everybody.
I didn't get that sense listening to him afterward, though. It was one of the old chalk it up to a back to back.
Well, I mean, clearly it seemed to me he hinted at it Friday night when he put Heinen with Krejci and DeBrusk.
That he's the placeholder
for Casa. I mean, let's face it. First of all, Carson Kuhlman guy plays his rear end off. Now, is he good enough to be in the top nine even? I'm not sure skill-wise he could do it, but he's always going to give you 100%. He's always going to be in people's faces, flying around in the forecheck. He creates pretty well. He's got some decent hands around the net for passing. And just like every coach he's ever had, Cassidy's in love with him, and you can't blame him the way the guy plays. So
I know I am a hypocrite because I love Carson Coleman, and he has one goal, and he shoots at about 2%.
I mean, it's so amazing. You know what? He plays so well that you forget until you look at the stats, and you go, oh, damn, he hasn't scored since November. You know, it's like amazing how good he is. So that's where he comes in, whereas Danton Heinen, you feel it because the guy has to be, bribed into shooting the puck and, getting involved. So clearly he's the one, but I think it lights a fire. We've seen how this team responds to competition, and it definitely lights a fire, maybe under Heinen, definitely under Bjork, and definitely under even DeBrusk, because Jake DeBrusk is so in and out. It's pretty amazing. And he's the one guy who, when they talk about, if I'm not scoring, I got to do other things, for some reason he can't bring it.
Well, he's not physical either. That's the weird thing about that line, people.
Right.
Like, I understand you add Kasha. Okay, you don't expect him to be. But he and DeBrusk together are your wings for Krejci?
Well, they're not going to get one difficult defensive assignment the whole postseason, right?
I guess. So you just start them in O-zones and just hope they score. And
I mean, Kasha's not that bad defense. I mean, he's not going to hit anybody, but his speed does disrupt. And I think that he's good on the puck and on the forecheck defensively. I think that that's an underrated part of his game. And the numbers show that. But, I mean, he's obviously – I mean, those guys aren't going to hit anybody.
Yeah. Again, that's what they did last year with Johansson, right? So I guess it's a page out of that playbook.
I mean, all they have to do is manage to work the standings to their favor where they play Toronto in the first round, and they'll be safe. They'll be done in four straight, and they'll have time to rest.
Yeah, interesting night across the league. A lot of the heavy hitters went down, including the Leafs. That was at home, not on the road. We'll talk about that coming up. We'll talk a little bit about that 9-3 beatdown the Bruins suffered. But mostly, want your thoughts on the Kasha trade and what the Bruins need by tomorrow's 3 p.m. trade deadline. This is Sunday Skate. You can reach us at 617-779-7937. Pete calls Kasha a really, really good player. Really good. Really good.
I think he has to say
with seven concussions.
I think he has to say it in the Larry David, very, very,
really, really good.
You're listening to Sunday Skate with Ken Laird from the Greg Hill Morning Show, Pete Blackburn from CBS Sports, and WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman. Sunday Skate is brought to you by Star Market, the official supermarket of the Boston Bruins, and by Red River Technology.
And David Ayers, I'm sure, can't believe what's happening to him right now. Played half the game, faces a shot, makes the save, keep the puck, David. You just got a National Hockey League victory. 6-3, Carolina.
I mean, you think about Tuesday night's game, right? And you think about how bad they were.
Right.
They were worse. Is that possible to come out and be worse after your game on Thursday where everybody's excited? Don't get excited about this team. They haven't given you any reason to get excited because they're not real and they're not contending anytime soon. With that type of an approach, Jake Muzzin has it right. They want it easy, and when it gets hard, they don't just disappear. They fold like a cheap tent in a small wind.
Beautiful. That's our good friend Craig Button, who was joined us on the Skate Pod earlier this year. Laird Kalman and Blackburn back ripping the Leafs.
Is that a Canadian swear word? Like, they're not real? Is that how Canadians swear?
I like that he says, like, when it gets hard. It didn't get hard. It got easy. You had a fake goalie
exactly.
In that.
All right, now explain this storyline to me real quick, Nick, because I want to know. More embarrassing, the Bruins going down 9-3 last night in Vancouver, or at home, Toronto loses 6-3 to David Ayers, he's just some
emergency goalie.
You will have to wait decades to find something more embarrassing than losing to a 42-year-old. He's the Maple Leafs AHL affiliate's Zamboni driver. He's out there with a Carolina Hurricane sweater, a Maple Leafs colored mask, Maple Leaf colored pads. He probably grows up idolizing the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he goes out there and beats him. But more embarrassing than losing to him is only taking 10 shots after he comes in the game. 30 minutes of hockey, they took 10 shots. I don't know what that is per 60, but I can tell you it's damn embarrassing.
They scored on their first two shots and then took 8 the rest of the game. Unbelievable.
When did he come in the second?
Second period, yeah.
So they had a 2-on-1, and the guy passed the puck. I mean, even Danton Heinen would have shot there.
Now, he's a really, really good Zamboni driver. Pete told me that during the break. So this David Ayers, don't sleep on him.
Problems.
He has concussion. And he can't shoot. But yeah, he's between the pipes.
I mean, that's the biggest thing, is that how do you not see that as a golden opportunity? I mean, when my... It was. They scored in the first two shots, and you're like, wow, this... I mean, I said to my son was ready to go to bed, and I said, you're going to get up, and you're going to see a 20. I said, it's going to be like 20. The game's going to be like 20-6. Because you figure they're going to score at least half the shots, and they're going to get like 30 of them. And they got 10 shots total, 8 after they scored. That just shows that this team has no gumption, no backbone. I mean, Craig Button could put it in the most polite Canadian way that he wants, but they pretty much suck when you consider $110 million payroll... under the $81.5 million salary cap, ownership lets them spend that far beyond the cap to put guys on LTIR, 40-something million buried in four forwards, and you can't beat your Zamboni driver in goal.
But I don't want to hear anything about that Maple Leafs offense. I know they got all the talent in the world, but if you can't put more than two goals on the board against
the
Zamboni
Hurricanes
driver.
And the Hurricanes had five defensemen. They took the second best defenseman they have out of the lineup.
But it's going to happen again. Bruins Leafs 3. I mean,
I thought you said it's going to happen again, that they're going to play a Zamboni driver and lose. Is that what, give Tuukka the week off and, you know, let Mr. Grizzlick drive or someone?
It's destiny. It's going to happen again, right? It will be Boston, Toronto in the first round. Tampa's 5 back now because they lost 2 in a row.
If Toronto bounces back from that last night and manages to get third place in the Atlantic, that will be a sign that they have a lot more character than I would give them credit for, because after last night, they should probably circle the drain.
Yeah, but I mean, how much competition do they have? Florida
State,
too.
Well, the competition is there, but I think look at Florida. I mean, everyone's always like picking them as the team that flies under the radar. At what point do they look at, are they a giant disappointment? I think maybe it's when they're spending $10 million a year on a goaltender that I told Ken 1,000 times wasn't worth the money.
I mean, everybody said that guy wasn't worth the money the second they signed that
contract. At what point do you count them as a disappointment and not as a team that's flying under the radar that could surprise people?
Well, that's absolutely a team that should buy into defense at the deadline. I mean, if you're going to sink $10 million into your goaltending situation and then not put a defense in front of them.
They play all the defensemen and forward.
If you're just joining us, we've been talking a lot about the Kasha trade for the Bruins. Pete is a fan. Likes the player and obviously getting rid of the Backus contract for the financial reasons. I'm very skeptical, Kalman. I think you're skeptical as well. I think
I'm definitely skeptical. I mean, I called it a gamble. That's what it is. It's a gamble that this guy is going to perform if he's the only thing. If you're going to solidify this team and there's a world where Kasha is a third liner, hey, I mean, you know, this is great. But if you're counting on him to come in and be that number two right wing, it's a gamble.
Well, the deadline is tomorrow. If the Bruins are in the mix for something else, who are they in the mix for? Right now, the top guy on like the TSN trade bait is Kreider. Pete, you don't think they're going to trade him at all now?
Yeah, I think Kreider doesn't get traded.
So beyond that, who's the top target? J.G. Pageau from the Senators? Is that the second?
Well, he's supposedly getting close on a deal too there, so you know he might be off the board. A lot of those lists are just, you know, TSN and Sportsnet crossing their fingers that they have something to show for 8 hours on Monday.
I mean, so, really? I mean, I think Saad is the top guy now of this list. Now he's listed 19th here. Kovalchuk, I guess, from Montreal. If they're going to trade him, they list Tyson Barrie from Toronto, their defenseman, as a trade bait guy. And I did see some people tweeting about this from Toronto. So are the Leafs are going to trade? They're going to sell at the deadline?
Well, as it was either Pierre LeBrun or Elliot Friedman said, they'll trade him if they can get a controllable, good defenseman in return for their rental who's kind of, you know, crapped his pants this year. I mean, so I don't think that's really happening.
It would be a hockey trade they're looking to make. So
right.
To shake it up, is that what's
happening?
Hockey
trades don't usually happen when you're giving up a rental for a guy. I mean, they're not going to get a player of Tyson.
I mean,
all
these things are wishful thinking for Leafs, because if every person in at least the Eastern Canadian media doesn't have, you know, their Toronto Maple Leafs underoos on every damn day, they're always hoping that what the Leafs are going to add to the lineup and how great they're going to be. You know, you realize, I mean, obviously this is like the most obvious thing in the world, but do you realize we're 1 year away from the Maple Leafs matching the Rangers' 54-year gold Stanley Cup drought? That's pretty amazing to think about.
Wow. I mean, of the trades that have happened so far, what's the most significant one? Is it the Penguins getting Zucker? Is it, I don't know.
You can make the case the Lightning getting, yeah, Toffoli for sure, and Coleman. I mean, I think those are two great things. I mean, you had a guy like Coleman to that Lightning
especially
lineup.
Coleman at term. Like,
yeah,
for Coleman to
exactly
be on that team next year, too,
he's part of that.
Solid.
You know, if you look at the cycle, I would say it goes, you know, JT Miller, Nemestikov, Miller, and now you go to Coleman, who's, you know, younger, like you said, and under control. I mean, so they've managed to get, fill that role with a similar type player, but save a lot of money on it.
So Tyler Toffoli scores two last night. Probably nobody was up to see it. It was in the third period, goals 7 and 8 for Vancouver. His first two goals as a member of the Canucks after the trade.
By the time Toffoli was scoring goals, the Bruins were playing like a team of 42-year-old Zamboni drivers, so it didn't really count that much. But it was just good to like rub a little salt in the wound.
The price on that was a second-round pick, another conditional pick, which I don't know what it could be.
And a pretty high prospect.
A high prospect, Tyler Madden and Tim Schaller, the former Bruins.
That was just to make the money work.
If the Bruins made that deal, what would the price have been? Who was the prospect there? Would they be looking for one of their top guys, I guess? Is that comparable?
Beecher or Vaakanainen, I would say.
So in hindsight, would you have rather have seen a second-round pick and Beecher go for Toffoli or the Kasha deal, which, Pete, you're saying really the whole thing is to get rid of the money and maybe keep Krug next year, and I don't know what they're going to do with the money this year. We'll see.
I don't look at it as an either-or. I look at it as you should do both. And if you add Toffoli and Kasha,
you're right.
If I had to pick one, I'd pick the Bruins deal just because he's you know, he's got an extra year. You get rid of the Backus contract. You don't have to give up a top-tier prospect, at least in the system, and you still get a player with a pretty high ceiling.
All right, Fred in New Hampshire was not a fan of the Rick Nash trade. We know that. Let's see if he's a fan of the Kasha trade. I know, Fred, you've been scouting Andre Kasha out in Anaheim thoroughly.
Oh, yeah, right. Ken, Pete, Matt, morning.
Morning.
Hey, yeah. So, you're going on and on about Kasha. We haven't even seen him here. So what do we know we have? 2 years ago, a 20-goal scorer, was it 2 years? The whole deal was to dump the Backus salary, and they dumped it. What's the matter with that?
Well, what's the matter, Fred, is you gave up your first-round pick who you could have used for something else.
We're going to be 30th first-round pick. Who knows? That's a crapshoot. Anyway, that's almost a second-round pick, basically. Come 4 o'clock tomorrow, if nothing changes, this is a very, very good team. I mean, last night was the anomaly, but and I was up to see those goals by Toffoli. But anyways, I would like to talk about Lazon.
Yep.
What we have here is an Adam McQuaid all over again. And 2011 wouldn't have happened without Adam McQuaid. This guy is, he's got the same pedigree. He you know what you're going to get. And I think in the long run, we're going to find out that he's more important than any trade that we've gotten. And again, I say this team, you've watched them this year. They're a very good team. Why do we keep saying that you got to put this piece in, that piece in? And I know the regular season means nothing, but I like what I see from this team. And the last thing I want to talk about is Halak. If he isn't the 7th player award this year, get rid of that award. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Freddie.
That was way too positive.
I am very positive.
Oh, my God.
Fred. I mean, Lazon, let's start there. Is he set? I mean, because you've been saying they could have used Dylan or...
He's solid. Absolutely. But we don't know what he's going to be in the playoffs. You don't know what he's going to be when you need to have experienced D. I mean, if that's been proven, you need to have experienced D with an edge. So he has the edge. Is he still going to have that edge in the postseason? And what's he going to do under the bright lights of the postseason? And not to mention, when he has to have his role expanded when there's an injury. And let's face it, we say when. There's going to be at least one defensive injury at some point in the postseason if you're going as deep as you want, right?
Well, so last year they did pretty good other than Chara's jaw, obviously, but they stayed pretty healthy on the back.
They got
back
through
line.
Great, but they didn't win. And the fact is, John Moore, maybe at some point you say, okay, John Moore is to steal Pete's term, a very, very good, seventh defenseman, eighth defenseman.
Really, really good.
Really, really good defenseman. But how about someone who's not just really, really good? How about someone who's an excellent eighth defenseman? Now, I'm not saying you're going to go out and get some top four guy. I'm like, fill that.
Tyson
obviously.
Berry, go get him.
But there are guys that can handle it better, guys that at least bring more of a playoff style to the game. And let's face it, John Moore doesn't show that playoff style. He's kind of just out there, facilitating instead of being an aggressor, initiator.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Lazon had the fight. You saw Coyle fight last night, so they've had a little more of that. Halak's another interesting guy. He had, I think, a couple of key saves in the Calgary win. What was the other one? The Rangers game. He had a pretty big save in the third of a 2-1 game there. I mean, he's been sneaky good. Rask getting all the attention and the Vezina love for sure. But somebody brought up that they should trade they should trade Halak. Was some writer for our website.
I couldn't make heads or tails of what he was trying to say about that, but
that was one of the more comical things I've seen this year.
It was basically saying that they should be creative, and that because he's playing so well, because there are teams that need goaltending, that you could probably get a haul for him. But I don't know.
I guess basically saying
that with only 20 at the time, I think there was 25 games left or 28 games that you say, well, if you're giving Tuukka, maybe they're planning to give Tuukka 16 of those 28. Maybe you give him 20 of those 28, and the other 8 you just plug in with an AHL guy. I mean, when
you can't give up those points.
When you're jockeying for position, it just doesn't work like that, and you can't sacrifice. Not to mention the injury aspect of it. You've put so much. You want to say they put enough into this season? They've put a lot into this season in terms of resources, in terms of money. You're not going to take the chance that if Tuukka Rask got hurt, you're putting your postseason hopes on Dan Vladar or Max Sove. So it just doesn't make sense. Unless you're the Leafs or someone like that, where you decide that backup goaltending is a fad and we're not going to invest any money in it.
Now, Tuukka was at 2.04 goals against average. It went up to 2.17 after last night, and his save percentage went down 6 points from 934 to 928. So that crushed his Vezina candidacy. I don't know. But then again, Tampa's goalie, Vasilevsky, gave up 7 last night, in Arizona. So maybe it's all for a moot point. The last point Freddie made is, hey, this is a good team.
Right.
Why are people whining?
No one's arguing it's not a good team, but they need to be a good playoff team. And we know how tough the East is, and we know how tough it could be. You know, there is some – we talked about facing Florida or Toronto. There's actually a lot of good arguments to say that you should finish second in this division because you don't want to face a Columbus or a Philly or someone like that in the first round. It's a lot tougher task.
Well, the teams I really would worry about are Tampa, Washington, and Pittsburgh. And last year they avoided all three of those teams on the way to a cup final.
Wouldn't you rather have a Florida or Toronto first round? We're assuming you play up to your standards and you don't go 7 games with Toronto just to make everything exciting. You might actually come out of there less banged and bruised when you take on a Tampa or a Washington as opposed to last year where, I mean, we can't forget how banged up they were by the end, too. Yeah. I mean, Marchand obviously had the bad hand, and Pastrnak never really was recovered, and other things were going on there. So, you know, the easier path is always the better path.
And I think going back to Fred's point, I mean, this is definitely a good team, but I think that also that's part of the reason why you have to go for it. The window is pretty small, and you have Chara here, you have Krug here, you've got, Bergeron having a good year, you've got all these things working for you. You have to go for it while the window is open.
And it's a good team, and everybody else has improved, too. Washington's a much better team this year than they were last year. Obviously, they had probably some Stanley Cup hangover, and they made the right moves, getting Gudas and getting guys like that in there. And then getting Dylan, the guy that Bruins probably should have been in on. We've seen that now. And then Tampa clearly has made I guess we won't know to the postseason, but it seems like they've learned a lesson. They seem like they're playing a more straight line game now. They're not dealing
around.
Well,
they stunk in the first two months of the season so that they'd have to play meaningful games.
Exactly. That's definitely helped them, right? But and then you add, a Blake Coleman to that lineup. And, I mean, that team, you talk, Don Sweeney loves to say the lifeblood of your organization is your drafting or whatever. But the Lightning, much like Pittsburgh and even Vegas to a little bit, I guess, but mostly Pittsburgh and Tampa, they find these guys, they had these guys in the AHL, they plugged them in, and not only do they hold the place, but they thrive. I mean, whoever saw like Anthony Cirelli becoming what he's become, and Yanni Gord and these guys, they really have a niche here where they plug these guys in, and that makes them better now too.
Sunday Skate presented by Star Market and Red River Technology. Final thoughts on the trade deadline coming up next. Laird, Kalman, and Blackbird on Sports Radio WEEI.
You're listening to Sunday Skate with Ken Laird from the Greg Hill Morning Show, Pete Blackburn from CBS Sports, and WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman. Sunday Skate is brought to you by Star Market, the official supermarket of the Boston Bruins, and by Red River Technology.
Well, it's a benefit, and that's typically how these deadline deals go for teams that are adding. David, I wish him well in Anaheim. He was part of three teams that made the playoffs. He was a part of that. We made a decision this year. We wanted to, change the sort of our personnel or, the makeup of it. And that part's always tough. And same with Axel. It seemed like he, was a great kid, hardworking kid. But that's the price of doing business. So I'm glad it wasn't someone off our roster. But again, those are Donnie's calls. We, just try to make it all work at the end of the day. And to have another asset that's going to come in, I can't tell you when, but it won't be tonight or tomorrow. It should benefit us. That's why we did it.
Bruce Cassidy, of course, Bruins head coach, talking about Andre Kasha, who will join the Bruins, we think, tomorrow, wearing jersey number 28. Of course, they don't play until Tuesday, but you think he'll be back in the practice mix, Calvin? We'll see.
In the practice mix, at least. I don't know if he's playing in a game.
And we're talking about him this morning. Analytics darling, he is part of a group that generated the most shots per 60 in the NHL last year in 5-on-5, Calvin.
Per 60,
straight,
Matt.
I got heard straight, it. 60 straight minutes. From the Athletics, so stick that in your pipe.
It has to be true.
And clean zone exits. Great puck carrier per the analytics. So we'll see if that transpires. One great goal scorer in the NHL who finally got to a 700 is Alexander Ovechkin at the age of 34. A lot of talk about whether he could pass Gretzky at some point this year. Do you think he'll actually do it? I don't think he's going to do it this year. In his career, of course.
That would be a hell of a... Well, maybe if he's playing against the 42-year-old Zamboni driver.
894 is the Wayne Gretzky mark. So Ovechkin's 34. If he stays at this pace of 0.61 goals per game, Pete, he'll get there in 2024. And Ovechkin, amazingly, hasn't missed a game since 2016.
He'll do it if he wants to do it.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I think that if he keeps playing and he stays healthy, and I mean those are two big ifs, but you know he's trending in the right direction. I think the motivation has to be there, and I think that he sees Gretzky's record in his sights, and I think that he wants it now. But like if he wants to be like Jagr, where he's kind of like mediocre to not very good for the final 3, 4, 5 years of his career, and he's scoring 10 to 15 goals per year, then I think that he can do it.
He's already, to me, he's a better goal scorer than Gretzky absolutely. Was. I mean, that era that Gretzky played in, some of the goalies, and I mean, it's
the
hard
goalies
to compare.
And the defensemen, remember, right. We're not that far removed from a generation where defensemen couldn't skate, or at least maybe only two or three of them could skate.
I think the guy that played net for the Hurricanes was probably better than half the goalies that right. Gretzky played against.
No, I saw Mike.
Plus they were wearing their pajamas instead of goalie
pillows
gear.
On their,
exactly,
on their shins.
Right.
Well, Mike Bossy said something like, who knows how Ovechkin would have done with a wooden stick, and if he played in our era. Red line in, et cetera.
Back in my day.
But it comes off.
There's two things that'll stop Ovechkin. One, the motivation, if he wants to keep doing this. I mean, obviously, if the NHL doesn't go to the Olympics, he might get pissed off. He might go play in the KHL, who the hell knows. The other thing will be, and you know, you don't want to bring this up on a Sunday morning and make people throw up their breakfast, but a work stoppage. You don't know what if they lose a season here, he probably won't. He might go to the KHL.
Well, they're guaranteed to not have a lockout for like the next 8 years. Right. Or something like that.
Well, that's if they just keep letting it roll over, but are they really going to let that happen? Do the players hate escrow enough to keep letting it roll over without an agreement?
Only 5 NHL players have scored 150 goals after turning 35. Recchi is one of them. The others are Timo Solani, Mark Messier, Brett Hull, and Jagr. So,
I mean, he's going to get it because you watch him now. Do you see any diminished returns? Is the fact that he won't at least play this way for 2 or 3 more years? So then he'll have enough in those 2 or 3 years where if he does get into that spot where you're saying where he drops off, first off, he's always going to be a power play threat. That's not going to leave him. That's like almost 20 goals guaranteed probably right there. And
it's not like he's beating – it's not like he's scoring 20 goals because of his speed.
Right.
It's not like he's
getting tough defensive assignments. There's so many things in his favor. And he does – it's a small blip, but he does get a lot of empty netters too.
Yeah.
He seems to always be out there.
But this year, he's trailing Pastrnak, of course, who scored 2 last night, another breakaway. The breakaway quotient on this team has gone way up. And I guess Kasha is a good shootout guy, right? So there you go. If nothing else.
There you go. That's huge for the playoffs.
Well, if game 7 of the final goes to shootout, we're in good shape.
Well, now 19 games left. We'll see if they have some overtime games that could decide things. Real quick, just looking at the schedule ahead, this is one of those weeks they finally come home after the 4-game swing. Calgary Tuesday, Dallas Thursday, and then at the Islanders next Saturday, I think, on a matinee.
Right.
What do you think? Size up the week that is here for the Bruins. Just mostly the trade deadline and the Kasha debut.
Let's see what they do on Monday, and then we'll have to see, we'll know more about what's going to do the rest of this week.
Those are 3 tough teams, though. I think the Bruins' schedule down the stretch isn't very tough, but I mean, this is a pretty tough week coming up.
All right. And we will be back next Sunday at 8 a.m. for another edition of Sunday Skate. And don't miss us on the Skate Pod. We will have that posted Thursday this week, reacting to the trade deadline as well. I'm Ken Laird for Matt Kalman and Pete Blackburn. See ya. Don't forget Mark James, Jermaine Wiggins, Courtney Fallon coming up next here on Sports Radio WEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.